following program is a production of the Barroom Network. It is intended for all audiences.
Doug Buffon.
This defense sucks. This is moronic.
John Buffon.
If your best run plays are coming off end arounds, there's a problem.
Doug was behind the microphone first. He never held back.
Very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives.
Now, it's his nephew, John, and there's no holding this buffoon back either.
An offensive-minded coach that's running an offense that got 9 yards and a half. A beaten-up defense that isn't necessarily performing in key situations. And a quarterback that was expected to take a big step forward looks like an unsalvageable wreck.
I've had it! I have had it! I want somebody to get kicked in the ass!
How many games can you rattle off that involve the team running the ball 7 times and they win? I can't think of any.
I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me.
Because Bears fans wanted to believe in the worst way that Chicago had a stable, competitive franchise. And this is what we got.
It's Buffon 55, the John Buffon Show.
To another edition of Buffon 55, a fast-paced approach to Chicago Bears football analysis. I am your host, John Buffon. Barflies, the Bears escape with another less-than-perfect win, but we will take it. Joining me, as always, is my producer and co-host, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, the Bears are 5-1. Doesn't matter how it came to be. How are you feeling?
I mean, considering that they keep winning as ugly as they are, I'm going to take it. I'm not going to complain. I don't care. At first, they were the worst 3-1 team, the worst 4-1 team, and now they're one of the worst 5-1 teams in NFL history. But guess what? They are atop the NFC North right now, and they keep finding ways to win, which that's all we can ask for.
Yeah, and as their fearless leader, Nick Foles, said, would you rather them lose pretty or win ugly? We'll take winning ugly at this point. But Alyssa, before I introduce our guest, can you go ahead and let our listeners know what it is we do around here?
Absolutely. So Buffon 55 has 3 segments. We always begin by learning about the Bears' upcoming opponent from someone who follows them closely. And today we're fortunate to have Rich Hammond, staff editor and NFL writer over at The Athletic LA. That's then followed by our B55 segment. That's when I ask John 5 questions, and his responses must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is John's way of paying tribute to the great Doug Buffon, his uncle, his mentor, and a man who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. We then finish things up by going into the basement, Buffon's basement, where Aldo Gandia joins John and me, and the 3 of us chug down some Bears talk. So, John, go ahead and take it away.
Love that Bears talk. Thank you, Alyssa, and welcome to Rich Hammond, The Athletic LA's managing editor. Rich, appreciate you being on. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's great to be with you guys.
Absolutely. And this is a big matchup coming for both teams, trying to legitimize themselves on Monday Night Football. Before we start talking about the Rams' tough loss to the 49ers, I want to get your thoughts on this Rams team in general. Got off to that 4-1 start with victories over teams in the NFC East, the Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, and Washington football team. And their sole loss was a high-scoring affair with the Buffalo Bills. So in your mind, was that fast start the result of maybe poor competition the Rams have faced? Because I asked this because after that loss on Sunday night, the Rams had fallen into that annual pretender or contender talk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's interesting to hear you talk about the Bears in that vein, because a lot of the same things being said out here in LA when the Rams started out 4-1. Well, okay, you're 4-1, but you've beaten arguably 4 of the worst teams in the entire NFC to get yourself to 4-1. So how legit is that? How seriously should you take that 4-1? And I think the Rams had hoped to answer that with a kind of an affirmative, a very positive game against San Francisco. And instead, they ended up causing more questions than they answered with a very tepid performance on both sides of the ball, really. So I do think this is a better Rams team. You know, it's a team that underachieved last year in going 9-7 and missing the playoffs. I think we've seen signs over the first 5 or 6 weeks here that it is a better team. But they clearly have some issues. They have some issues tackling on defense. They have some consistency issues on offense. So by no means is this a finished product. And by no means is this team one that you would look at and say, this is clearly one of the best in the NFC. I think that the potential is there. The talent is there. But they still have to put it all together if they really want to be taken seriously as one of those top teams.
Talking specifically about that loss to the 49ers, it was deemed disastrous by a lot of analysts and pundits, and even Sean McVay publicly said that the team kind of beat themselves. Is that performance against the 49ers a blip on the radar, or is that kind of an indication of how the rest of the season might play out?
That's a very good question. Some of it, I think, was a little bit of a blip. Some of the issues that they had were tackling issues. I mean, the 49ers dominated the time of possession in the first half. I think it was like 22-8, which is just, I mean, totally out of whack. And a lot of the reason for that is the 49ers had a very simple game plan. I mean, they were trying to move the ball horizontally. They weren't taking shots down the field. It was just, let's get rid of the ball quickly. Let's try to pick up some chunks of yards. And the Rams just were not able to pursue and wrap up and swarm the ball. I mean, they were letting some of those backs and receivers through for those 5, 6, 7 yards. And when you keep doing that, I mean, that's just the time of possession just kills you. So the reason I bring that up is I think that's something you can clean up. It wasn't like they were having huge, like, structural problems on defense. It wasn't like players were overmatched. It wasn't like their cornerbacks were getting torched or, you know, their defensive front wasn't getting any pressure or anything like that. It was things that they definitely need to clean up, but it's things that they can clean up. On the other side of the ball, they were a little out of whack with their play calling, and that's something that I think Sean McVay is going to have to look at a little bit. They got a little pass heavy. They're still trying to figure out their running back rotation a little bit, and I think they got a little bit out of sync there in not going to the hot hand with Darrell Henderson enough. So I'd look at the offense a little bit more as the area where they need to really clean some things up and prove that was just a blip last week.
You mentioned Darrell Henderson. He continues to shine and leads the team in rushing. But if you're a fantasy football player, you never know which L.A. running back to really go with when you got Malcolm Brown, Cam Akers being sprinkled in there, and, of course, Henderson. So for listeners that aren't familiar with the running style of these guys, how does the dynamic of that backfield really work?
Sure. Yeah, they're still trying to figure it out. I've got Darrell Henderson on one of my fantasy teams, so I'm as interested as party as anybody else. But the way you saw it going into the season, it seemed to make a lot of sense, to be honest with you. I mean, Malcolm Brown is the guy who's been around. He's been the number two guy for about 5 years. You kind of know what Malcolm Brown is. He's a short yardage, you know, very good in the red zone. Not the most flashy, not the most dynamic, not the most athletic guy, but very consistent, very steady. So you kind of figured he'd come in and you know, maybe have that first down or short yardage or red zone role. Darrell Henderson also seemed to be pretty well defined because they drafted him to kind of be a complementary back. He's very shifty. He's very good at, you know, kind of putting his foot in the ground and making one cut. He can catch and run. So he had a lot of the skills that you might look at as kind of a more traditional third down back or a change of pace back. And then Cam Akers, you kind of thought would step in and maybe be more of that every down back or maybe your, you know, 18 carries per game kind of back. So that's how you look at it at the start of the season. It hasn't really turned out that way at all, in part because Cam Akers has been injured a little bit. He had to miss a couple games because he hurt his ribs. And what ended up happening there is Darrell Henderson showed himself to be a little bit more than we thought he could be. He was able to pile up the carries and do a very good job of running the ball, probably better than we anticipated that he would. And it kind of marginalized Malcolm Brown a little bit. And then even when Cam Akers came back this past week, he didn't get a carry. So it's very interesting to see how that's evolved. I think Sean McVay is still trying to figure it out. So it definitely is confusing for fantasy owners. And I think even for Rams fans who maybe like to see a little bit more consistency there or a little bit more of an established rotation among those three guys.
Yeah, and it probably could confuse their opponents too, because the Bears don't know which one to key in on, even though Henderson had the good performance last week. I wanted to ask you about the $130 million man, Jared Goff, because Bears fans vividly remember that Week 13 performance in the 2018 season. He was sacked three times, threw four picks. But after that, kind of up and down for Jared Goff, getting high praise and then also being doubted sometimes. So among the Rams faithful, are they happy with the contract and the situation they have at quarterback?
Yeah, you mentioned that Bears game, and I think for people who really follow the Rams closely or follow the NFL closely, that was a big game, because that, even though the Rams ended up going to the Super Bowl that year, that was the first game where a team really put together a defensive game plan that really, truly kind of stifled the Rams. I mean, they had had their moments here and there where they'd struggled a little bit, but that was the first time a team had put together a full 60-minute game plan and executed it, where you just went, wow, they really, really took the air out of the Rams' tires. And I think that it certainly carried over to the Super Bowl. I think it carried over to a lot of 2019, to where the Rams really had to re-envision things a little bit because of the way teams were starting to defend them, to take away certain things, the way that they pressured Jared Goff. I think Sean McVay had to reimagine a lot of that. So it's relevant to your question, because I think so far this season they've done a better job with that. They had rolled Jared out a little bit more, for instance, even though you don't think of him as being a particularly athletic quarterback. He does seem to thrive when he can kind of get out of that pocket a little bit and roll out and find his tight end or find Robert Woods on a crossing pattern or something like that. So they've done a little bit better job with that kind of play action. And the other thing is their offensive line has played a lot better this year than it did last year. So that certainly has been a big help to Jared. He was a little bit shaky in that in this past week's game. He had looked pretty darn good over the first four games, and I think it had taken a lot of strides. So I think this will be a good bounce back game. Jared admitted himself that this past week's loss was his worst game of the season. I agree. I don't think he cost them the game by any means. I also don't think he was as sharp as he needed to be. So I would look for him to have this is going to be a very important bounce back game against what, as we know, has traditionally been a pretty tough defense against the Rams.
Two of Goff's biggest targets, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, have formed kind of one of the more dynamic duos as far as receiver tandems in the NFL. What have you seen from the receiver game from Kupp and Woods and beyond? Because they've had some contributors lower on the depth chart as well. What's been your assessment of the wide receiving core?
Yeah, those guys just fit so well with what the Rams want to do. And if you looked at them individually, you wouldn't think like, wow, these are like really dynamic receivers. I mean, these aren't the fastest guys in the world. These aren't the, guys who are going to go up to win a lot of 50-50 balls. They're not going to beat you in any 40-yard dash or anything like that. But they work so well within that offense because they're kind of like tacticians, and they know the route trees are just amazing, the things that they can do out there. And Jared Goff has trust in them, to where he can put the ball in pretty much any situation. So that it's both of those guys. I mean, they signed Robert Woods in 2017, and everybody kind of went, Robert Woods, why are you giving him this money? And then they drafted Cooper Kupp in the third round, and people went, Cooper Kupp. I mean, yeah, he's a good little possession receiver. But it might not work on other teams, but it works on this team because of the way that offense is designed and because those guys can do pretty much anything. I mean, Cooper Kupp can beat you over the middle on one play, and then he can beat you over the top on the next. So, very tough to defend. They've tried to work in some other guys. Josh Reynolds is a guy who can be a little bit more of a deep threat. They drafted Van Jefferson, who I think will have a bigger role, as time goes on. But he hasn't really made an impact to date this season. And they've used a little bit more two tight end sets. So you see those guys like Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett getting more involved. But that bread and butter is always going to be with Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. And just to wrap it up here, one of the reasons you saw that game get so out of sync this past week is because neither one of those guys got going. And they both had a couple drops that were very uncharacteristic. So to see them not being able to hit, neither one of them having an impact on that game, when that happens, the Rams offense just gets really, really out of sync.
Another thing that kind of ties the Rams and Bears together this week would be the fact that the Rams announced Tuesday that they signed kicker Kai Forbath to their active roster off the Bears practice squad. There been kind of an issue with the Rams kicking game? And trust me, us in Chicago know all about kicking problems from recent years. But is there any kind of motivation behind that signing?
Sure. I'll give you the quick story. I mean, the Rams had Greg Zuerlein for a number of years, going back to 2012. He was going to be a free agent. In the last couple of years, he had had a little bit of injury issues. He'd had a little bit of consistency issues in mid-range field goals. So I think they kind of thought, you know what, if you're going to have to pay a kicker like that, maybe it's time to just go in another direction. So what they did is they brought in one guy from the CFL. They brought in one guy from the XFL. And then they drafted this guy, Samuel Sloman, in the seventh round and had a little bit of a training camp competition. At the end of which they decided that Sloman would be their guy. That was a little bit of a surprise, because from everything that the media had seen in scrimmages and practices and things like that, he had not seemed to be the best kicker, I'll just be honest with you, just based on production. But the Rams went with him, and there's been some issues. Like you said, I don't need to tell Bears fans how this goes, but some low kicks, a couple missed extra points. I believe one missed field goal. Nothing that cost the team the game, because they weren't in any type of really, really close game like that. But enough to make you wonder, like, are they in some trouble here with this young guy? So what they exactly intend to do, I'm not really sure. You know, bringing in Kai Forbath now I believe he still has to go through all the COVID-19 protocols and all that, and even though he's just changing teams. So I'm not even sure when they're going to be able to get him out there on the practice field and that sort of thing, how many practices he'd even be able to have with the Rams this week. So it's a little bit unclear, whether he's being brought in to be the immediate replacement or whether he's just kind of that, light the fire under the existing guy and hope that production gets better, because I think the Rams realized pretty quickly that you can't have something like that go on all season. So I wouldn't be surprised if Kai Forbath ends up being the kicker, but I'm not real sure if it's going to happen this week or not.
Something Bears fans love to hear: the other team might have kicking issues. The Bears won't be the one with the underdog in the kicking game. So that's music to our ears. We appreciate that. I want to switch sides of the ball real quick, because one of the more impressive things about the Rams defense is that they make halftime adjustments really well. They do an extraordinary job in quarters 3 and 4. And just one example is that LA's opposing quarterbacks have thrown for 6 passing touchdowns and no interceptions in the first half, but have notched just 2 touchdowns and 3 picks in the second half. So can you tell us a little bit about defensive coordinator Brandon Staley and some of the standout performers on this defense?
Yeah, that's been very noticeable to me, too, that they have, even in this past game where you said, well, they were pretty sloppy in the first half, and they certainly were, but they came out in the second half and really tightened that up. So whether or not that's a communication thing with the coaches, whether or not it's tightening up some things with the scheme, I tend to think it's a little bit of both, but I have seen that as a clear positive from Brandon Staley and from this defense. So I think he's a young guy, obviously. He's very bright. He's very innovative. He's not a guy who's just going to stick to his guns and be like, well, this is what we're going to run. Even if we're struggling, we're going to keep doing the same thing. He's a guy who's not afraid to switch things up, either in terms of personnel or blitzing or different packages, whatever it may be. So I definitely give him credit for that. He has a couple obvious bookends, one being Aaron Donald up front, and the other one being Jalen Ramsey in the secondary. Aaron Donald, pretty straightforward. You know what to do with him. You point him in the direction of the quarterback and tell him to go. So that's pretty easy. But Jalen Ramsey, they've done some very interesting things with, depending on the opponent from week to week and the matchup. They've even been using him in the slot a little bit. It's a position that Brandon Staley calls the star, to where he kind of is able to move him around depending on the matchup, depending on maybe if a team has a very talented tight end, the way the 49ers did with George Kittle. He's been very, very innovative and you know, not afraid to experiment with Jalen Ramsey. He's got a good secondary to work with. They've got good depth there. They've got pretty decent depth up front. Linebacker is an issue. They've had some injuries, and even before the injuries, they were a little bit thin and a little bit inexperienced at linebacker. So if you're looking for an issue or an area where the Rams are a little bit exploitable, that's pretty much where it is in that the middle part of that defense.
As for Monday night's game, obviously the Bears are making their first appearance at SoFi Stadium. And even though millions of people will be watching it on TV, it doesn't sound like many, if any, fans will actually be there to see that Monday night game. What can you tell us about the stadium situation in L.A.?
Right, yeah. Unfortunate for everybody. I mean, for so many reasons. We wish we weren't in this situation to begin with, but because we are, the teams throughout California have kind of had to follow the edicts from the state in terms of, you know, when things are allowed to open up and that sort of thing. So out here in California, we're on kind of a tiered plan based on colors. So I think it goes like purple, red, orange, and green. I don't even know what the best one was. We're not even close to it yet. So they actually just announced this week that California counties that were in the orange tier would be allowed to have fans. So for instance, the 49ers being in Santa Clara County, they are now actually allowed to have fans at their home games. It sounds like they're not going to just yet. But Los Angeles County, which is where the Rams and the Chargers play, is still in the purple, actually. They're still in the very worst tier that you can be in. It seems like it's going to be quite a while before fans are allowed in there, which is very frustrating. I mean, everybody's frustrated, because of the whole situation, and we all want to get back to normal as safely as we can. But obviously, you know, this beautiful $5 billion stadium just opens that everybody's been looking forward to seeing for 4 years. And it just doesn't look like it's going to happen this year. So I feel for fans, you know, all around the country who can't see their teams. But, the fans in L.A. not being able to see that new stadium, I know it's a big disappointment for them.
Have you been to the stadium, or any of the writers from The Athletic been over there? What's the review of that brand new facility over there?
Yeah, actually, I went to the last game, the game against the Giants, and I had been there throughout. They would, you know, take us on various tours over the years when, you know, from the groundbreaking, up until they were just about done. And it's a very impressive place. I mean, the Rams aren't. This isn't an infomercial, but I'll just be honest with you. Like I've been to a lot of the newer stadiums. I love the one in Minnesota. I think that's a beautiful stadium. A lot of people are going to compare it to Dallas because it's I believe it's the same architect, and obviously, you know, Stan Kroenke and Jerry Jones are very tight. To me, I like the feel of SoFi Stadium more than I like the feel of AT&T Stadium. It's actually a bigger stadium than Dallas, if you can believe that. If anybody's ever been inside the Dallas Stadium, it seems like it's its own city, basically. And SoFi Stadium is actually bigger square footage-wise, but it doesn't feel like it when you're inside the stadium. It feels like, it's kind of like more of a vertical kind of thing to where, it's a little bit steeper. You feel like you're looking down on the field a little bit more instead of being so far away. But it's the video board that they have. They call it the Oculus. It's a wraparound video board, kind of similar to the one that's in Atlanta, and although a little bit bigger. It's a really, really nice place, and kind of a half dome, half open air, because they have a roof on it, a translucent roof, but there's also it's also open-ended, so you get some fresh air and some of that nice California weather. So I feel like I just gave a nice commercial for the Rams, but it's a very nice place to visit, and I think when fans are allowed in, they're really going to enjoy watching a game there.
Oh, absolutely. Just from watching Hard Knocks, you see some awesome shots inside of that stadium. So hopefully things can turn normal, who knows when, but when they do, fans got themselves a pretty good home for the Rams. One of your writers over the Athletic LA wrote about possible trades the Rams might make before the November 3rd deadline. My question for you is kind of more all-encompassing. So last year, there were over a dozen deals done before the deadline, including names like Jalen Ramsey, Emmanuel Sanders, Kenyon Drake, and Leonard Williams. Do you anticipate the market might be less busy because of this whole COVID-19 climate?
Yeah, I kind of do. I think maybe you saw that in baseball a little bit, too, at their trade deadline. I don't think it was quite as intense as it usually was, probably for a little bit of that same reason. And I don't know whether teams are going to be quite as gung-ho about things at this trade deadline. I don't think the Rams will be. I mean, they've kind of set themselves up to be what they are at this point. They've already spent a lot of their draft capital. They don't have next year's first round pick because of that Jalen Ramsey trade that you mentioned. Around the league, I get a sense you don't hear, even though we're still a couple weeks out, but you don't hear that same kind of chatter. You don't hear the same names kind of being bandied around where you normally would right now. Oh, maybe it's time for this guy to move on, or is this guy disgruntled, or this guy's contract situation. I feel like you usually hear a little bit more of that at this point of, 2 weeks before the trade deadline than you normally do. So I would say that's true across the league. And I would say that's definitely true with the Rams. I'd be surprised if you saw, anything of much significance, if anything at all.
You mentioned baseball, so I have to ask you, what are your thoughts on the World Series?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's been on quite a journey here. So it's interesting. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm a Cubs fan. I've been a Cubs fan
for
a long time. I fell in love with them back in the 80s when they were on WGN, even though I was a California kid. So I'm not a Dodger fan, so I'm able to watch it with a little bit of detach. I've been through my heart attack in 2016 when the Cubs were down 3-1 and had to come back, and it was interesting to watch the Dodger fans in the NLCS. They were down 3-1 and everybody's just going, oh, it's over, another disappointment, fire Dave Roberts, all of this stuff. And I'm like, hey guys, I've been there. It's not impossible. They can still do it. And, it's really the power of a talented roster. Not to put, not to make it too obvious, but you looked at it and you thought, well, I mean, all they have to do is win three games in a row. I mean, how many times in the year did they win three games in a row? It's not that hard when you have this team as talented as the Dodgers have. So, yeah, everybody's, everybody out here is still coming down from the high of the Lakers, obviously winning their championship, and everybody's making everybody's loving the comparisons because the last time the Dodgers won the World Series was 1988, which was also when the Lakers won the NBA title. They won it that year. So everybody, I think, is hoping for a good sign, and it's a good time for us as sports writers because there's a lot of interest and a lot of excitement out here right now.
Parallels being drawn from 32 years ago. Take it any way you can get it. Before we get you out of here, I'm going to send you over to Alyssa. Alyssa, you got any questions for Rich?
Yeah, I got a couple. So, Rich, so these last two games between the Bears and the Rams, they've been hard-fought defensive battles, and, it's safe to assume that we're going to see more of that on Monday night. What do you think will be the deciding factor in who wins this game?
Yeah, I think on the Rams side, they have to get that run game going. And I think a lot of people look at the Rams because of, they've invested so much in Jared Goff and those receivers that we talked about. But really, a lot of what they do is set up with that run game because they love to kind of be able to run it on you and then hit that play action, whether it's a deep crossing route or something. So if they aren't able to get that run game going early and Jared is forced into some third and eights, third and nines, that sort of thing where he has to stand in the pocket and, the pressure's coming. I mean, that's the situation that you want to get the Rams in if you're any type of opponent. So I think from that perspective, when you look at the Rams offense versus the Bears defense, I think that's the matchup that you're going to watch. On the other side of it, I don't know. I might say the same thing, actually, because I think the dream situation for the Rams would be you shut down the run game and then you kind of tell Aaron Donald to pin his ears back and go after Nick Foles. And I think that's a situation that the Rams very much appreciate. And again, that means for the Rams, that means cleaning up a lot of the things that they did wrong last week against the 49ers, because they put Jimmy Garoppolo in some very, very easy situations, some very advantageous situations, and he was able to take advantage of them. And, you know, Nick Foles certainly has the capability to play that same type of game. So the Rams need to do a better job on first down, even second down, and put those Bears offensive players in some difficult situations on, you know, third and longer situations.
I'm just like imagining Aaron Donald going against this Bears offensive line, and I'm praying for Nick Foles in this matchup.
Well, that, and but you know what? A lot of people said the same thing last week. The 49ers were banged up. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo's on a bad ankle. And what they did so well, the 49ers did, was, you know, his release time, I mean, he was barely holding on to the ball at all. It was 2.2 seconds, and getting it out to a running back or to the tight end or to a, you know, short route or something like that. So when you're in that situation, like, that's clearly the play. Like, you can't just expect to sit back there and throw the ball. And the 49ers did a very good job with that, to the surprise of a lot of people, I think. So if I'm the Bears, I'd be watching that. I'd be watching that tape pretty closely.
So with that said, you know, before we let you go, can we get your prediction? Who do you think is going to come out on top in this game?
Yeah, it's, I was going back to some of those last couple, you know, Rams-Bears games, and I remember picking the Rams in the first one and going like, I think it'll be close, but, you know, I think the Rams have the talent to get it done. I'd still pick the Rams. I think they're pretty upset after that game against the 49ers. They know it's a game that they should have won and that they didn't really, you know, perform to their expectations. You have to give the 49ers credit. But the Rams did a lot of things in that game that were uncharacteristic and that you'll probably see them clean up, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So I don't think it'll be a blowout by any means. I don't think it'll be particularly high scoring. I would go somewhere in the range of 24 to 20. That'd be my guess.
We definitely appreciate you picking the Rams. We always appreciate our guests picking their teams, because otherwise it's been the kiss of death. So we certainly appreciate you picking the Rams.
Thanks,
on
Rich.
This. Yeah, big props there. And Rich, before we let you go, can you tell us what you guys are working on over there at The Athletic and where we can find the work and how they can interact with you on social media?
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, thanks for everybody who checks out The Athletic. Obviously, we have great Bears coverage, too, so you can check that out all under the same umbrella at theathletic.com, the app or the website. You can catch me on Twitter at @Rich_Hammond. Our Rams writer, Jordan Rodrigue, does an excellent job. She is at Jordan Rodrigue, Jordan with a U, and she has some great analysis. She, as you just said, wrote a little bit of a primer on the trade deadline. She'll have a story coming out Friday, kind of answering a lot of questions heading into that Bears game, and then she'll have a recap on Monday night. So definitely looking forward to an exciting Monday night game, and thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Rich Hammond, managing editor over at The Athletic LA. Rich, thank you so much for being on. We'll talk to you. We'll catch up to you when the Bears are playing the Rams in the playoffs, I guess.
You got it. Hey, it could happen. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. We've got a lot more show coming up. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. It's Aldo Gandia, and I hope that you are enjoying this episode of Buffon 55 and a lot of the other shows that we have. We got a great collection of podcasts here at the Bears Barroom Radio Network with our new name, Barroom Network. And so I'm hoping that those of you who listen to us on iTunes will leave us a favorable review, so that way more people can become exposed to our shows. So again, those of you who listen on iTunes, leave us a review, and we would really appreciate it. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Buffon 55. Now it's time for our B55 segment. That's when I ask John 5 questions, and his response must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is John's tribute to the great Doug Buffon, his uncle, who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. So, John, you ready for this?
I'm always ready. Let's go for it.
Okay, so I heard you when we were kind of like exiting our interview, mentioned the P word. with the Bears. So obviously the Bears are now sitting at 5-1. And with every win, it's bringing up more talk about that P word, the playoffs. So according to a number of formulas, the Bears do have a good probability of making the playoffs. So when is the right time to start talking about the Bears playoff run? This is a fun one to kick off the segment. Let's see how optimistic you are, John. The clock starts now.
Well, look, depending on what source or website you look at, the Bears currently have about an 85 to 90% chance of making the playoffs and about a 47% chance of winning the division, according to 538. So their playoff odds have jumped up nearly 15% since last week, and their odds of winning the division shot up about 25%. So those numbers sound fantastic. It's enough to get you excited whether you think this team is for real or not. Listen, the idea of wild card weekend rolling around and the Bears actually having a matchup, that's all we were really aspiring for at the beginning of the season. So to answer the question, I think you can really start talking about it around the midpoint of the season. We can talk about it now, and it's a really fun conversation, but to really start plotting things out and predicting where things might end up, I think you wait until you're about 8 or 9 games in. And just for the record, we can have that discussion regardless of whether the Bears are 7-1 or 5-3 at that point. So this 5-1 start has really allowed us to start having those conversations moving forward.
Yeah, and, you know, talking about playoffs, you know, I always do like a post about it. But, you know, with the Bears, obviously I'm a little pessimistic. And I know, John, you are too, our history
sure.
with this team since we became fans. So
sure.
it's kind of like that one of those I'll believe it when I see it things. But like you said, you know, I think this next stretch coming up that they're going to be playing games against the Rams and the Saints and the Titans, and their schedule does get a little tougher going, you know, through the season. But at this point, they're 5-0 in the NFC, which is going to mm-hmm. be big for playoff implications moving forward here. So we'll see what they can do. I mean, it's always fun to talk about the playoffs and the Bears are in the hunt because it doesn't happen very often in recent history. So, I mean, we'll see where this goes.
And there's an extra playoff spot. So they got all the room in the world to screw this up.
I still remember when they were in the playoff hunt last year. And funny enough, it was the Rams game where it felt like that kind of just like
done.
Deflated.
It was over. Yep.
It was over. So despite playing a bad run defense in Carolina, the Bears still managed only 63 rushing yards. John, last week you said this would be a good measuring stick for the rest of the season as it pertains to the Bears run game. So what's your takeaway with this Bears rushing attack? 55 seconds and go.
Well, it isn't promising. Maybe the James Daniel injury is going to take a bigger toll than we thought. Maybe not having Juan Castillo there played a bigger role than we thought. But the fact of the matter is the Bears run blocked so poorly that Matt Nagy had to start going with swing passes to act as the running game. I just don't think that's sustainable. Eventually, you're going to have to establish a run game, whether it's by scheming it or moving some pieces around or even making a deal before the trade deadline. But I thought Bobby Bombs made a good point on our post-game show here on the Barroom Network. For all intents and purposes, Cordarrelle Patterson is the number two running back on this team. Cordarrelle Patterson got one carry against the Panthers. So I'm not going to start beating the drum that we need more Cordarrelle Patterson carries, but that kind of shows you how out of whack things are. When Tariq Cohen went down, we assumed Cordarrelle Patterson would take on some of those carries. Montgomery got 19 carries. Your number two tailback got one. Nick Foles got more than that.
Yeah, this run game, I remember the beginning of the season when the offensive line looked solid. And even through those first two games, I was like, I don't trust it. Let's see a few games in how they look. And I feel like they're, showing their true colors. Obviously, losing James Daniels, James Daniels is one of the best linemen on, playing on the offensive line there. So his loss is huge. I think, Rashad Coward, we've seen what he can do. We saw last year when he filled in at right guard. Yeah, not good. So like you said, the Bears really need to do something to bring in a guard because they need help on that offensive mm-hmm. line. But yeah, the running game, if you can't do it against like the 8th worst rushing defense, how are you going to do it?
Doesn't look good.
Does not look good. So, we're going to switch over to the positives because that's what we like to do here now that the Bears are 5-1. we're putting that offensive negativity behind us. The defense here is continuing its hot streak, holding the Panthers to just 16 points. And you had very high hopes for this defense back in August, John. So do you think this kind of play is sustainable for the Bears? The clock starts when you do.
Well, the defense has been the strength of this team all year and really every year that Matt Nagy has been here. But what we're seeing now is the defense creating turnovers and giving the offense short fields. They created three turnovers against Carolina. They created a big-time turnover against Tampa Bay. Now they're doing what they were doing in 2018. Bailing the offense out and giving them 20, 30, 40-yard fields to play on. So Kyle Fuller is proving that he's a top-five cornerback in the league and potentially the hardest-hitting cornerback in the league right now. And Roquan Smith turned up the heat last week and is flying all over the field. Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, Robert Quinn, they've been putting immense pressure on the quarterback as of recently. And the secondary is performing better than expected. Jalen Johnson was a day-one ready starter. And we've seen splash plays from the likes of Tashaun Gibson, DeAndre Houston, Carson. And then, of course, you got Eddie Jackson, who is still one of the best safeties in the game. So the 19 points per game that they're giving up is sustainable. Let's hope that the turnovers are as well.
Yeah, I was going to say the big takeaway from, you know, that game against the Panthers was the fact that they finally got those takeaways, which was that element of their game that, you know, they had in 2018 that made them such a dominant force, you know, obviously giving the offense short fields and scoring. You know, obviously Eddie Jackson had another pick six callback, which is just ridiculous. But, you know, they got those takeaways. And this defense, they just keep getting better. They are allowing the fewest touchdowns in the league. I think they have 8 now. You know, the defense is they're warming up. And I think that, like, I feel like the defense is at a point where we might see something similar that we saw at Soldier Field a couple years ago against the Rams. I'm really hoping for it. But this defense is exactly doing its job. Now, let's see if Nick Foles and the offense can get there.
4 picks would be sweet.
Ah, that would be nice.
So after Bears pull out a 3-point win. 3-point win on 4 picks.
Hey, ugly wins. That's what Nick
ugly
Foles
wins.
Wants.
I know. I'm being cynical. I'm being cynical. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Positive thinking.
Positive space, John. Positive
You're right.
space.
I'm sorry.
So speaking of, after the game, Matt Nagy said in his press conference that he didn't want to discuss the negatives, and he continued talking about the great play of the defense. Nagy was brought in to install a great offense, and it has just been average at best for most of his tenure. So how do you perceive Nagy's comments after the game? Your time starts now.
Look, I can understand a head coach not wanting to talk about all the things his team did wrong after a win, but when you're asked about mistakes that can be directly linked to coaching, you'd like to hear an answer that isn't kind of condescending or makes you feel like you don't need to know. He was asked about the delay of game after a timeout, and he basically said he didn't want to talk about it. And I know we give Matt Nagy a ton of crap on this network, and I know he doesn't care what a bunch of fanalists think about his execution as head coach. But I will say this about Matt Nagy. I think he's great at getting his guys to buy in. I think they keep swinging until the very end, and we've seen that on numerous occasions this year. However, part of the job is talking to the media and talking about things when they go wrong. Not every coach can do the Bill Belichick thing. Belichick gets away with it because he has 8 Super Bowl rings, 6 as a head coach and 2 as a coordinator. When you have that kind of cachet, people don't normally call you out. But when you're a third-year head coach, you can't take the holier-than-thou approach sometimes.
Yeah, listening to Matt Nagy, it's looking back or listening to his post game against the day after the Buccaneers game when he was so angry about the offense and he was challenging his players but also the coaching staff to get things right. And, you know, he was brought in here to make this offense not mediocre because, I mean, obviously, John, we've seen a lot of poor offenses. Aldo, you've even seen a lot of poor offenses if you're not sleeping back there over your years. So, you know, he was brought in to fix that and to mold Mitchell Trubisky into a franchise quarterback, which none of which has happened so far. And, you know, they keep preaching patience, you know, but, you know, at this point, it's just getting tiring.
We are in week 6 or 7. of what, the third year? When does our patience run out? Come on.
Well, as Bears fans, I mean, we have suffered a lot over the years.
30 more years, we'll be fine.
Oh God, John, I can't do that.
I know.
So many fans, pundits, and analysts are waiting for the other shoe to drop with this Bears squad. They've been squeezing out wins in games some say they should have lost. Despite this, they are 5-1 heading into week 7. I know this is an open-ended question, but do you feel more confident or more nervous about the Chicago Bears team as they stand atop the NFC North? The clock is off. Go for it.
Look, I said this on the post-game show. We are allowed to be excited and critical at the same time. Whether they won by 20 points, 10 points, or 1 point, the Bears are atop the NFC North and have a 5-1 record after 6 weeks. If you would have told Bears fans back in August that the Bears would be 5-1, I guarantee no one would have asked, well, how did they look in those 5 wins? They would have just taken it. So they are in a great spot. A lot of really good teams don't get to start the season at 5-1. A lot of teams that were projected to be better than the Bears aren't anywhere near 5-1. Let's take a look at Minnesota and Philadelphia. So I'm ecstatic that the Bears could probably go 4-6 for the remainder of the season and probably still make the playoffs. That doesn't mean this team does not scare the hell out of me. The running game and the offensive line is a mess. There's a different quarterback calling the shots, and they probably need at least one turnover every game to really get over the hump. So they aren't winning in their traditional 2020 NFL manner. They aren't scoring 35 points per game. They're barely scoring that in 2 games. But every time the Bears have been good, it's because of defense and then hoping the offense makes a play or two. It's not a comfortable way to watch football, but we just got to get comfortable with the fact that there may be very few blowout games this year. We're going to have to be okay with that. Like I said, 2020 is a weird year. Maybe it'll take a weird team to win it all. Either way, it won't be boring. That concludes the B55 segment. We're going to roll right into Buffon's basement. We're going to kick Aldo Gandia. Hopefully he's still awake at the – I don't know if he's in the recliner. He's working the board. He's passed out. Aldo, you with us?
Grabbing a beer.
Oh, gosh. I haven't had a beer in 3 months, I think.
3 minutes. Wow. Wow.
3 months. I've lost 20 pounds.
Oh, my goodness. So what are you grabbing?
Hey, I don't –
I've been drinking whiskey, actually.
There you go.
Oh, that'll do. Yeah. Come to Buffon 55 for it. Health tips from Aldo. Don't like your beer gut? Drink a lot of whiskey.
That's right.
Our next sponsor.
All right, guys. We're hanging out. Yeah, we're hanging out in the basement here. There's plenty of things to really talk about with this Bears team that just kind of some loose ends. But one thing that we kind of talked about briefly on the post-game show after watching – that awful performance from the offensive line as far as the run game goes, a lot of people are saying the Bears got to go out and either sign somebody or go trade for somebody. And if you're going to do it, 2020 is the year to be aggressive at the trade deadline whenever you're sitting at 5-1. But as we just heard from Rich, you know, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen as far as COVID-19 protocol. And, you know, even though they could be traded for this week, they may not be able to play for another 2 weeks. Aldo, since we just brought you in, I'll start with you. Would you like to see the Bears go out and trade for somebody or at least go sign somebody?
Yeah, you know, I've been meaning to do some homework as to who might be available because of a contract situation and a team might want to get a mid-round draft pick and they're not feeling good about their season. We know the Jacksonville Jaguars have been holding fire sales and stuff. So if there is a player that can help, you know, at least the depth of the offensive line. Brad Biggs in his Chicago Tribune Q&A column said that there aren't going to be any teams who are going to want to give up a healthy offensive lineman. And he's probably right, you know, given COVID and given the fact that you want to protect your quarterback and so forth. But you might. I mean, there's been some movement with some mediocre-type offensive linemen, and I think that right now I'm just a little bit nervous if somebody goes down, then what happens? And then I was reading an article in The Athletic written by Kevin Fishbane about the problems with the offensive line, and maybe you need to bring in somebody just to fire up the starters and tell them, listen, we've got competition for your job, Charles Leno. You know, I don't care if the guy, you know, is 35 years old and hasn't blocked in a year or so. Just maybe sometimes just making a move like that could fire up the starters. And if you can pick up another position player that can help you in November and December, you're going to be in the playoffs. I mean, at this point, you really have to have a dramatic second half of the season, a dramatic downfall. So, you know, why not try to pick up a player that could help solidify your playoff chances or your playoff run here. So, I'm all for making a move. You've already made moves for veteran players like Jimmy Graham and Robert Quinn and guys who aren't going to be with this team 2-3 years from now. So why not pick up another guy who is sort of a rental player if it's going to help your chances to solidify a playoff spot and maybe make a deep run?
Yeah, I would say, like, obviously the Bears are 5-1, which is just kind of, you know, weird to keep saying that. Yeah. So they are in contention for the playoffs here. So teams that are in contention, they need to make moves to better this roster. And like Aldo was saying, the offensive line, that is arguably the biggest weakness on this team right now. So, and I know that Ryan Pace hasn't really been known for making trades for the trade deadline. I think the only one he made was back in 2017. Dontrell Inman when the Bears had.
Oh, yeah.
They had no one at receiver, and you bring in Dontrell Inman, like that's, you know, which was the best they could do at that point. But
one of my favorite, one of my favorite John Buffon rants was about the wide receiver position, and he rattled off a bunch of names, including Dontrell Inman, as, you know, it was the rant about re-signing Allen Robinson. You rattled off names about these mediocre receivers we've had over the years. And mediocre is being kind, by the way, when it comes to some of those names.
Oh, my God.
Dontrell Inman was a star here compared to...
Yes. Marcus Wheaton.
Oh, my goodness.
I could go into it, but we're trying to be positive. So
we are trying to be positive. 5-1, John. 5-1.
Yes. So you think they should go out, they should at least explore the possibility of bringing someone in, Alyssa?
I think they should, and like someone that was just released, the Bills released left guard Quentin Spain today.
Yeah,
so he's someone that you wouldn't have to train for. Yeah, you can go out and sign him. I mean, he was a full-time starter for like 4 seasons now, so I mean, obviously the Bears need a lot of help on the interior of that line with James Daniels going down, so I mean, I would definitely not be opposed. I hope that Ryan Pace is on the phone trying to make it happen.
Yeah, they signed him to a 3-year, $15 million extension just 7 months ago, and then they cut him. So, I mean, this is a guy that the Bills obviously thought highly of to give him an extension, and then they did some restructuring, and he was either outplayed. But, I mean, one of the things that we all said going into the season was this offensive line is going to be operating on just a razor-thin margin, because you looked at the depth chart, and you're just like, well, the starters might be okay if everyone plays up to their potential. After that, oh boy, the depth is not good. So you look at this, and obviously you lose James Daniels, one of the guys where you're really upset at losing, and now that depth comes into play. So if I'm Pace, I'm looking and saying, listen, I got to at least beef up the depth. This guy might be a plug and play kind of thing. Check to see what the trade market is. Maybe you can delve out a fourth or fifth round pick and bring in a guy that can play serviceably for the rest of the year. Because if they don't, I just don't want to see them squander a 5-1 start. Because they're worried about 2022, 2023, and beyond. Because we talked about this on the post game show. Nothing's guaranteed next year. The right now the Bears are 5-1. They are in the driver's seat for a lot of their own destiny. So next year, you know, God forbid any of this would happen, but the quarterback position goes to hell even more, and they don't have anybody at quarterback, or a big defensive starter goes out, or two big defensive starters go out, and the line is even worse next year because they're trying to replace guys on the fly and they're worse. So nothing's guaranteed next year or the year beyond. What is guaranteed right now is that the Bears are 5-1. And you have to capitalize on your chances. We see so many teams go to the Super Bowl and then not make the playoffs the next year. So this isn't always a dynastic sport where it's just like we're going to build a 10-year competitor. The Patriots are talked about so highly because that doesn't really happen anymore, where that sustained success where you're constantly in the AFC Championship game or constantly in the Super Bowl. If you have an opportunity to really do something this year. And you can talk about the Bears not being legit. You can talk about how they're a lot worse than what their record says. But it doesn't matter. If the Bears get hot now, or the Bears offense somehow figures it out, they're 5-1. And they're not trying to make a late run and trying to make up for earlier losses. They're already front runners. So if they can figure it out or add a few pieces and really get it together, there's nothing holding this team back from making a deep playoff run. They have a championship defense. They definitely have a defense you can win a Super Bowl with. So if the offense starts clicking and you beef up the line or you add another weapon on the offensive side of the ball, who's to say the team can't make a run? And they can do that in 2020. So I appreciate how aggressive Ryan Pace is sometimes. So let's see if he's really going to be aggressive with 2020 and say, hey, we're going for it. And I think that's the attitude they had going into this year because, like Aldo said earlier, you don't sign a Danny Trevathan. You don't re-sign Danny Trevathan. You don't sign Jimmy Graham. You don't sign Ted Ginn. You don't bring in Robert Quinn on a big deal if you're playing for 2022 and 2023. I think they're playing for right now. And if they really are, and they're sitting at 5-1, they got to make a move to really, really go in. You can't go in half-assed. You can't be 5-1 and say, oh, let's just play it safe. Go for it. I say go for it. Bears fans are starved enough. They don't want to hear about 2021 because we don't know who's going to be playing quarterback and who's going to be healthy. We don't want to hear about 2022. That's 2 years from now. Who knows what's going to be going on? Let's talk about 2020. It's a weird NFL year, and there's a lot of things that can happen. It's going to be a battle of attrition, not just by physical health, but it's a battle of attrition by keeping guys off the COVID list and protocols and all this other games changing days, going to Tuesday night football or things being flexed to 4 o'clock or extra bye weeks and all this other stuff. Go in now and try to win it because nothing's guaranteed after this.
I'm fired up. That was good.
You're ready to run through a wall for John.
Really? I'll go make the trade negotiations right now. Let's do it, man.
Send this to Ryan Pace.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, I got a trade deal for you.
Also, I love listening to John talk about playoffs. I love the optimistic.
It is weird. It's weird.
I haven't seen the side of you, John.
Yeah, really.
But I'm fired up. I want to see. Like, listen, if you would have told me back in September that the Bears would only have one loss and they have an 85 to 90% chance of making the playoffs, I'd say you're crazy. But they do. And there is nothing more exciting than wild card weekend or the divisional round, knowing that it's the play. I love the NFL playoffs to start with. I love watching playoff football because you see good teams playing good teams and the loser goes home. And that entire year that you invested in can either advance a week or it's gone in an instant. That is the drama. That is the intensity. That is the excitement that goes along with the NFL playoffs. It's one and done. There is no best of seven series. There is no, hey, we'll get them tomorrow. There is none of that. It's win now or go home. And those 16 weeks prior mean nothing, or they mean everything. So to even watch it without the Bears in it is extraordinarily exciting for me. When the Bears are in it, there is no other feeling like that. And to recapture that feeling in 2006, 2007, where they made it to the Super Bowl, and you watch them the entire year, and you see them keep advancing and keep advancing, and they get to the highest possible game in that league. There is no feeling like that for a football fan. So I just want to recapture some of that feeling. If you have a chance to do it in 2020, go all in and do it.
If it's going to happen, it's going to be in 2020. That's how crazy this year is.
Yeah. Yeah. And Aldo, I'll ask you this. I mean, are you as confident as say if Ryan Pace says, well, we got a lot cooking for 2021 or we got a lot cooking for 2022. We've talked about the mess that 2021 can be. We can talk about the mess that 2022 will be. We don't know if Nick Foles will be here. I can basically guaranteed Mitchell Trubisky won't be here. Right. We don't know who they're going to draft or if they draft anyone. We don't know if they're going to bring in another free agent. We don't know what they're going to do. We don't know what's going to happen with some of these contracts. Kyle Fuller's contract's going to put a huge cap hit on that they're going to have to restructure at some point. With the pieces you got now, are you more interested in the present than worrying about, hey, let's build things up for 2021?
Yeah, typically I'm the guy that will say, you know, let's keep the draft picks. Let's make sure that you're building a team that can have success over several seasons. But given what Pace is already committed to, then we're in the win now mentality. And so you've got a 1 year window, 2020, maybe a 2021 window. If you re-sign Nick Foles or find a competent quarterback, but these defensive stars, they're on, yeah, the, on 30 years old on the other side of 30 in some cases. And so that window is very short. And so I'm willing to then, you know, in 2021 or 2022, start a rebuilding process that could take 2-3 years if in exchange we build a Super Bowl team. And so you got to do it now. And I'm not, you know, to trade away your first round draft pick for the 2021 draft, you know, I wouldn't do that unless you're getting back, you know, a dynamite player. And so that's
with a couple years.
Yeah, exactly.
With a couple years on his contract.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I'm not saying, you know, be reckless, but definitely you got to go for it now, man.
Hey, I'll follow up with the Alyssa. Are you more in the like, hey, let's gear down, fellas, or are you all in as well?
No, I'm all in. I mean, every move that we've seen Ryan Pace make is indicating this is win now mentality, like Aldo was talking about. I mean, when you this defense, this Super Bowl caliber defense, which was the same Super Bowl caliber defense bat, you know, 2 years ago, that window is closing. You know, like you said, some of these defensive players are aging. Obviously you have some of the younger guys like Eddie Jackson and Jalen Johnson that are coming along that will, you know, will still be here in the future. But this defense is truly special. All of Ryan Pace built it from the ground up, and there's the window is closing. So every move that we've seen him make, even going out and getting Nick Foles, who has experience winning a Super Bowl and taking his team there, you know, when it didn't look like he was going to do it. I mean, these are all moves that tell you you're going to win now. So, you know, going back to the trade thing, they need to go out and get someone for this offensive line, because offensive line is the biggest weakness on this team right now. And this offense really needs to get into some kind of rhythm here by the middle of the season if this team is really going to make a deep playoff push.
Yeah, and I'll just, you know, reinforce what you both just said was, every move that Ryan Pace has made in the last year or 2 years has been a win now move. And we talked about all the guys they signed and the guys they let walk. They let Kwiatkowski go to bring in the more veteran Danny Trevathan. And so my thoughts on that would be, don't back down now. Now that you're 5-1, don't stop what you were doing before, because I think a big fear of mine and probably a lot of Bears fans were they saw these moves and they said, you made all these moves to win now, and I don't know if this team is an actual Super Bowl contender. You made all these moves to bring in the veterans, and you're making these moves to win now, and I'm not sure this offense is going to score enough points to actually contend in games. I don't know if the defense can hold its weight given what the offense is doing. So I think a big fear was if you're going to make all these win now moves, you better have a win now team. And I think that was a big concern for a lot of people going in, because you're really putting a lot of chips into 2020 and you're not really sure the team's that good. Well, that you're, some people may not be sure that this team's good still, but the fact of the matter is they're 5-1. So don't back up. Don't hit the brakes now. Just go. You got what you wanted. The Bears are 5-1 with the team that you put together to win now. So go win now. So I'm getting a little fired up about this, because I'm talking myself into a lather and I'm ready to be hurt again, like I said last week. So I'm allowing myself to be vulnerable again. But I want to go around the horn again and ask Aldo. I'll start with you. The Bears have three tough games coming up: the Rams, the Saints, and the Titans. Those are three big games against three possible playoff teams. How many games do you think they need to win in that three-game stretch to still be in a really good position? Because I don't think anyone really expects them to go 3-0. That would be fantastic. But the probabilities are low that they'll win all three of those games against three good teams. Out of the Rams, Saints, and Titans, how many do you think they should, or I don't want to say should, but need to win?
I think they have to win at least one. And so to come out with a 6-3 record after those three games, I think you're smelling good. And, you know, you still have five games against your NFC North. And Mike Ditka used to say this all the time: if you want to win your division, you got to beat your divisional opponents. Well, they're 1-0. And they've got another game with the Lions, which they should win. I mean, let's face it, the Lions are the Lions. They've got two games against a Vikings team that looks incredibly weak this year.
Real bad.
And Kirk Cousins has lost his confidence. They've got injury issues and so forth. So sweeping the Vikings shouldn't be a tall task. And what remains, you know, if you would have told me that the Bears had a chance to sweep the Green Bay Packers prior to what I saw last Sunday against the Tampa Bay Bucks, I would have said, you're nuts. There's just no way they can sweep the Packers. But after what I saw, what the Bucks did to the Packers, I think that there's a possibility they can sweep them. And if they don't, if they come out 1-1, then a 5-1 record or a 4-1 record, would that be a 4-1 record? Yeah, in the division would be pretty nice. And so you're looking at a 10-win season, and with the expanded playoffs, that's good. So to answer your question, win at least one, but I believe they're going to win two out of those three. I really do. The Titans are the biggest game that scares me because that Titans team looks, wow, they look really good.
And they run the ball, something the Bears have had a little bit of an issue trying to defend. And if they're going to, if Derrick Henry can rattle off 200 rushing yards last week, they could be eaten again against the Bears.
He's unbelievable.
Do you think? Do you think one game's enough in those three game stretch?
Yeah, I was going to say one because you look at where they are right now at 5-1, and you look at, like Aldo was talking about, the rest of their divisional schedule and some of these games coming up. They have a couple of games against the Vikings, another one against the Lions, the Texans, who, you know, they're looking a little bit better than they did earlier in the season, and the Jaguars there. So, I mean, like you said, they could go like 4-6 for the rest of the year and still, you know, manage with that extra playoff spot. Still earn a playoff spot there. So, I mean, I think, like Aldo was saying, I was like, he's reading my mind. I think that they could and probably will come away with two of those. I would say probably the Rams and the Saints would be the best options. That Titans game does terrify me. Derrick Henry, I want none of him.
He's so scary. Yeah. I mean, I'm watching him on TV. I'm saying to myself, I would never get in his way to tackle him. I would say, I would do ole. Go. He's something else.
Yeah. I'm going to say, I'm trying to be the optimist here. So I'm saying that they could potentially lose all three of these games, lose to the Rams, Saints, and Titans. And then let's say, okay, now they're still sitting at five wins. They probably need four more just to, you know, get into the playoffs or get into the playoff picture. Let's say they lose three, and so that makes them what, 5-4? And so they can sweep the Vikings. That's two right there. They could beat the Lions. That's another one. Then they got the Jags and the Texans. They can win one of those, and they could possibly win both of those. So that's five more wins. They could lose all three of these games and still go 10-6. It'd just be an icing on the cake if they could get one of these games, hell, even two of these games. But I'm going to try to not get too down if they don't, because there's going to be plenty of opportunities to make a little hay towards the back end of the schedule when they can get the Vikings twice, they get the Lions again, they get the Jaguars, they get the Texans, who we don't know up and down, and they got an interim head coach in Romeo Crennel. So even if they were worst case scenario, they go 0-3 in this stretch, there's still a good possibility that they could get into the playoffs. So I take that for what it is, but from a large stamp, from a, you know, grand view of things, you'd like to see them win one or two of those games against a good opponent to say, okay, we actually belong in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, and if they're going to win, you know, one or two of those games, let's hope it is against the Rams and the Saints, getting those NFC wins, obviously. Right. If there's a game, a team that we want to lose to the Titans, you know, give that one up. That's an AFC opponent. So, you know, keep that NFC record sparkling.
Yeah, the one thing that I think is important for this team, though, is, you know, like Nagy was saying, that the team was rocking and rolling on the plane ride back. And so that's a great mojo that you hate to lose. And so that's why I'm really, really on my knees praying that they beat the Rams so that they continue that mojo for a while longer before experiencing another loss. I just believe that, you know, when you got that positive vibe and you got everybody believing, you just hate to interrupt that, especially against a Rams team that to me looks very beatable. You know, to win those games that they won against the NFC East, I went back and looked at them, not on tape, but statistically, and read stories about those games, and those were, you know, those were not very impressive wins. And the loss against the Buffalo Bills, that, you know, I mean, the Bills, yeah, they've, you know, played well this season, but, you know, the gave up 30 some points to the Bills offense, and we've seen the Bills now not play. Their offense is starting to sputter a little bit. So there's just some dents in the armor of the Rams that I believe we got to win this game. We got to keep that mojo going. And then if you lose the Saints and Titans, I can deal with that a lot more. But I just want to keep that mojo going at least another week.
I think the least amount of points they scored was against the Giants
right. This
year. So looking at, you know, what that offense can do against that defense, and now with the Bears coming to town, I think that, you know, I like Aldo said, I'm praying that, you know, that they win this game. I don't want to lose that mojo. It, you know, kind of like with 2018, there was a vibe about that team. They were so much fun to watch. And, you know, this is something that hopefully this 2020 squad can develop the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about this just because I like talking about the weird and the hypothetical and the far-fetched. So as soon as the news came out today that Antonio Brown could be eligible to return, you saw Bears Twitter automatically quote tweet with that typical Bears should be on the phone. Ryan Pace, get on the phone. And so I feel like they do that for every single free agent that becomes available. But would you guys in a million years entertain the thought of bringing Antonio Brown into that Bears locker room? Aldo.
If I were Ryan Pace, I would immediately make the phone call and tell his agent, no way in effing hell. You know, there's chemistry with this team now. And while I wouldn't mind seeing some help at the wide receiver position, given that I'm beginning to get the feeling that Anthony Miller is not going to have the NFL career I was hoping for and expected when the Bears traded into the second round to pick him. And so picking up a veteran wide receiver, you know, who has experience, it would be pretty cool. But Antonio Brown is not that guy. He's just too disruptive. The recent history of his behavior on and off the field is not what this team should be dealing with. I'd rather take my chances with an Anthony Miller and a Ted Ginn and some of the other guys on the roster, the young guys, you know, Riley Ridley, Javon Wims. I'd rather take my chances with those. And we know that what we have with Darnell Mooney, this guy is playing like a legitimate number two wide receiver. So, and then I would hate to bring in an Antonio Brown and the message that would send to Allen Robinson, you know, spending money on Brown. So that would not be a good for the mojo.
Yeah, I'm running too. I'm telling him no. Like you said, Aldo, you don't want to mess with the chemistry here in this locker room. And Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, they really talk about bringing in high character guys to this locker room to make sure that culture is not disrupted. So, you know, like you said, I mean, I'm saying no. I know that, you know, Bears fans want to link any available, you know, kicker, running back, receiver, quarterback, anyone, link them with the Bears. But Antonio Brown, I know obviously he has the talent, and that's what makes people want to be like, oh, should the Bears go get him, you know, to add another offensive weapon, you know, for Nick Foles. But I mean, like you said, the distractions, I'm not doing it. I'm staying far away.
Yeah, and let's not forget that didn't Antonio Brown, whenever he was talking to Deion Sanders on some podcast, say if he would consider joining the Bears, and he's like, nah, not with Nick Foles.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And it's just right. Like,
yo, you're not going to bash our quarterback and then, hey, come on in, buddy. Just think about his track record. How long would it take before he's throwing Nick Foles? This guy threw, Roethlisberger under the bus. He threw the entire Raiders under the bus. At one point, he was going back and forth with Robert Kraft and the Patriots and all of them. And it's just like, it would take, 10 seconds before he's unhappy in that offense before, you know, he's throwing Nick Foles and Matt Nagy under the bus. I don't want that. I don't want anything to do with that. The Bears, if they have one thing that's really, really, really strong, it's I think their locker room presence, where they really all get along with each other. They all have a pretty good mojo going with each other. They got Club Dub. They're, you know, always talking about each other. They're interacting with each other on Twitter, which means they're doing stuff they're not required to do, which means they kind of like each other, which is, you know, always a bonus in professional sports. So if you can keep that going, I wouldn't just throw a nuclear bomb in there with Antonio Brown, because the dude hasn't played in a year, and he played one game. So he hasn't played a meaningful game in a stretch of games in 2 years. So I'm sure he's keeping himself in phenomenal shape. I'm sure he's still a great athlete, despite the fact he's going to be 32, 33 years old. But I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't think the biggest need right now is a receiver. I think you got a legitimate all pro number one receiver in Allen Robinson, and you got some really good prospects in Darnell Mooney. Maybe Anthony Miller takes a stride there. I think you got a good enough receiving core for this offense to be successful. I think if I'm going to spend any money, it's going to be on the offensive line. And I'm going to see, what is my biggest weakness right now? Okay, let's protect our quarterback. Let's try to open up some holes for the running game. It just kills me that every time that there's some name that's available, it's just like, Bears got to get on this. Bears got to get on this. Bears got to make the call right now. And it's just like, hold on. I mean, we're not playing Madden here. We're talking about human beings and what they actually do. And like, what you have to, take into account the salary and what this person's going to bring to the table, and will they be a problem in the locker room? And Antonio Brown, whether it's on a football team or in his personal life, has caused a lot of distractions. And you know, anywhere that Antonio Brown goes is going to bring the circus, just like Tim Tebow did. No matter where he went, there was a media circus following him, seeing if there was a story there, seeing if there could be anything that they were going to follow up on. I don't think the Bears necessarily need that right now. I think they should just be playing football. And I don't know if it's worth it to have what they think Antonio Brown might be able to do.
Let me throw a name at the two of you and get your reaction about, you know, maybe getting on the phone and seeing if this guy's available and what he's available for. And it's a guy who has been critical, not of Nick Foles, but the entire organization, and that's former Bears wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey, who has not played this season, and he is his status of his injury has been now termed as a calf strain that he sustained in his rehabilitation from a Lisfranc injury. They say that the Lisfranc is fine now, but he suffered a minor calf strain recently, so he's probably out for another week or two. So if you wanted to pick up a wide receiver for December, would you entertain maybe throwing a fifth or sixth round draft pick for Alshon Jeffrey?
Alyssa, go ahead.
I was like hoping John would take that. Oh, gosh. I mean, obviously, when Alshon was on this team, you know, he was just a phenomenal player. And, you know, like Allen Robinson, you know, he's drawn comparisons to him. So, I mean, if we could get old Alshon back, I wouldn't mind that. Obviously, remembering how he just disrespected the entire Bears organization and the city of Chicago. I'm like torn between this. I'm like, I'm thinking if you can tell me he's going to be healthy, you know, come December. I mean, it's kind of hard.
Well, according to Mike Garofalo, Mike Garofalo is reporting that he should be ready for Week 8's Philadelphia Eagles versus Cowboys game. So this truly does appear to be a minor calf strain. So yeah, he will be healthy.
I mean, I'd entertain it.
Will he? Will he? No, I'm not on the fence. I'm no, I don't want him back. No, because you know, if it's not the calf, it's the hamstring. And if it's not the hamstring, it's the shoulder. And if it's not the shoulder, it's the toe. And absolutely not. And the guy has a pretty big contract with Philadelphia. And I'm not, even if it's a rental where they can cut bait with him, I don't want to pay him anything for that, because he's going to come in week 8 or 9 and he'll be questionable week 10. So you can't control injuries, and I'm not going to, you know, criticize somebody for that, because it's uncontrollable. But that's just, for me, it's a bad investment. I don't want him back. I don't think that he's going to really provide that going over the, you know, going over the hump kind of thing that you, oh, we brought in Alshon, Super Bowl. I just don't see that, and I don't see the consistency that you can get out of somebody that you actually trade for. If you trade for somebody, they better be a consistent upgrade on what you have. And I just have this fear that if you bring him in, then it's going to be one of those, well, he might play, he might be ready, could be week by week 10, maybe. Oh, he played week 11, out week 12. I've just, we've seen that song and dance too many times. It's not something I want to have to relive. So, I mean, best of luck to him. I hope he is healthy by that, and I hope he plays well. But I'm not interested. But Aldo, I'll see your Alshon Jeffrey and raise you another wide receiver of big caliber that has been underperforming this year because he can't seem to get in sync with his new quarterback. And it's a team that has already played the Bears this year. And I'm talking about T.Y. Hilton, who has not done anything with Phillip Rivers in as the quarterback with the Indianapolis Colts. They have not been on the same page at all. And I know that because I have T.Y. Hilton on my fantasy team, and he has done absolutely nothing this year. So if you could get T.Y. Hilton for a third or fourth round pick, is that a name that you'd be okay with?
Oh my goodness. I love me some T.Y. Hilton. Now I'm taking a quick look at his contract. He signed a 5-year, $65 million contract with the Colts. And this was a year ago. So he's not a cheap acquisition. So I would probably say, let me double check that when he signed. Actually, no, I take that back. That was signed in 2015. So he's actually in the last year of his contract.
He'd be a rental.
Exactly. So given that information, I would say, hell yeah, bring him on. I'll take him for 6, 7, 8 games in a playoff run. Absolutely. He would be a great compliment to Allen Robinson. And then, you know, I'll whisper over to A-Rob and say, listen, we're still working on getting your deal done, you know, and we want you here. We want you here long-term, but we want to win a Super Bowl this year. And we think T.Y. is going to help us do that. And Darnell, you're still our man. We got you planned for long-term. And Anthony Miller, see that bench over there?
Go to the jugs machine.
Yes.
Catch 500 balls a day.
That's right. And take some
Sure you go to the first down marker.
That's right.
Yeah. And running forward.
Go forward, Anthony, not backwards.
Oh, my gosh. Please. That infuriated me when he did that. But yeah, I love that, you know. Now again, I would not, you know, given that it's a 1-year rental, you're hoping that they're only asking for a third or fourth round draft pick.
They're not going to re-sign him anyway.
Exactly.
I can't see him in Indianapolis next year.
Yeah.
So if they could get something for him, and maybe, I don't know if you get I don't know how the compensatory picks work for that, but if they don't re-sign him or he leaves, maybe they get like a fifth compensatory. But if they can get a fourth from the Bears, be like, oh, by all means, go ahead. We're not using him anyway.
Right. What do you think, Alyssa?
Yeah. No, I'm not on the fence about this one. I will take T.Y. Hilton, knowing, like you said, he's a rental. He would be a great compliment to Allen Robinson. And like you said, I'm showing Anthony Miller the bench. Hilton, you know, he says he wants to be there long term. You know, like John said, I don't see how they re-sign him past this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he hasn't had, like, I don't think any 100-yard game since Andrew Luck left. But I still think that he would be a great compliment in this offense, next to Allen Robinson. So I'm full in on this one. I take my Alshon Jeffrey. I'm not on the fence anymore. Get him out. I want T.Y. Hilton.
So how about
this? I'm glad we cleared that up.
How about this trade proposal? Anthony Miller and a fourth round draft pick for T.Y. Hilton. I would do that.
You got to really like Darnell Mooney then. And then I think they do. And maybe you bring Riley Ridley up a little bit more and see what he can do. But then that would be Pace saying, hey, we moved up to get Anthony Miller and we whiffed on that one too. Sorry. That'd be an admittance of screwing up another second round draft pick like you did with Adam Shaheen. And so it'd be Anthony Miller again. And was that in the same draft?
Well, guess what? Remember. He's going to be drafting a quarterback soon, so that's another admission.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so we're going to be throwing Band-Aids on everything. If I were the Colts, I'd probably take a fourth round straight up, knowing that I'm not going to get, I'm probably not going to re-sign Hilton at the end. Now they might, but if I were to guess, I would say they wouldn't. And if they would probably just take a fourth round pick straight up. But if they say, actually, we'd like a developmental wide receiver, how about Anthony Miller in a fourth? knowing that you're only going to get Hilton for 6, 7, 8 games, but you do have Darnell Mooney in the hopper, and he looks to be potentially your number two coming up. And you can always find wide receiver talent in the 3rd, 4th, 5th round like they did this year. I'd probably do it. I think I would. And that was me going through my inner thought. I was literally playing that out in my head out loud to everyone. Yeah. I was using my own deductive reasoning there. So
we were inside the brain of John Buffon there.
You really were. I just opened up my brain to everybody there. So I probably do it. I probably hit the accept button. But, man, I'd rather just do a draft pick. But if they say we want Anthony Miller, I probably do it. Now, would they want Anthony Miller? I don't know. But if that's what they wanted, I'd probably do it.
Well, he's got a cheap contract. You know, I don't see why not. I mean, you know, I'm going to pose that question to Greg Gabriel, who is good friends with Greg Ballard, the general manager of the Colts. And maybe even Greg would, you know, text him and say, hey, you know, just kicking around some ideas here. What do you think about Anthony Miller?
Yeah. Would you do it,
there
Alyssa?
There you go. If it happens, then yeah, let's go. Yeah, let's go. Give credit to Buffon 55 for, you know, that little inside tip there.
We that's sparked right. it. I'm gonna take all credit on that too. We got
some compensation.
That's good. Yeah, it's a lot better than Alshon Jeffrey, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and if I'm taking no credit if he shows up in Chicago with something.
Yeah, nobody wants credit.
I'm on the record. No.
That would be on me.
That's probably Ryan Pace's best move is not re-signing Alshon Jeffrey, right?
And he's also the one that didn't re-sign Cam Meredith, right?
That is correct.
And he ended up out of the league. Like, God bless him, and I feel terrible for him, but they saw something where he couldn't stay on the field. He got hurt, and then he went to New Orleans and didn't do anything because he was hurt, and they kind of bounced around a little bit. But I remember people being up in arms. It's like, you didn't re-sign Cameron Meredith. He's the best receiver they got. And God
like
bless
the dark
him.
Ages, John.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know. But I remember people thinking that Cam Meredith was their best option. They weren't going to get any better than that, and they let him walk. And
very
I mean,
true.
They did. It was kind of, it wasn't great the year after that.
But. Yeah, when assessing Ryan Pace's career as general manager, you've got to account for those moves that he did not make. So, because that's
right.
important too.
Yeah, he could have sunk a lot of money into Alshon like the Eagles did, and they're waiting for him to play. They and their receivers, I mean, they're getting the production out of that Fulgham kid out of nowhere. But like they were relying on Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson this year, and neither one of them could get on the field. So Carson Wentz is thrown to guys that were, you know, he didn't even know their name. The reason their name's on their jersey is so Wentz knows who the hell he's throwing the ball to. Mm-hmm. So it's just moves like that, not sinking money into guys he shouldn't, is just as much should be accounted for as moves he does make. So give him some credit on that. But before we close things out, I want to talk quickly about the new show that Alyssa and I have on the Barroom Network. We debuted it a couple weeks ago. It's one that I'm super excited about. It's still excited about. We're calling it Pass the Mic. It's a show all about empowering female voices in sports media. We're going to have a different guest on every week, and she is going to share her journey, her struggles, everything that went into becoming a professional member of sports media. And we've had some awesome guests so far. Episode 1 was Peggy Kaczynski. If you're from Chicago, you definitely know Peggy Kaczynski, famous sportscaster from the area. Episode 2, we had Amanda Ruler on, who was a Canadian athlete and coach and broadcaster. She has a phenomenal story and talks. And what I appreciate out of all of our guests so far is their willingness to be candid about some of the harassment and some of the comments that have been thrown their way. And it really spotlights the ignorance that has been going on for far too long. I mean, it's 2020 and this stuff is still going on. And with the introduction of social media, all it does is amplify that to the umpteenth degree. So it hopefully gives people a different perspective on some of this stuff. And we also have an amazing guest coming on. We're recording a show this week with Lindsay O'Kay, who is a former ballerina and turned independent NFL blogger. If you follow her on Twitter, it's a great follow. And if you don't, you should follow her, because she is just a really fun follow as well. It's very informative, just a really fun follow as well. And she's going to talk about her journey and some of the struggles and harassment she's had to deal with. So this has been an incredible journey so far, and we're only two episodes in. And remind you that these episodes are evergreen. So if you're just hearing about this show now, or you just hear about it, you know, you just heard about it recently, go back and listen to these, because they're not, you know, you don't have, they're not newsy. So we're not going to be talking about, recent news. They're talking about their story. So these are just as good to listen to a week after we record, to a month after we record, to a year after we record. So we ask that you give it a listen. And if you like it, listen to all the episodes, because each individual has a different journey, has different struggles, and they deal with things in different ways. And it's just an awesome way to really have a conversation that isn't had too often in this profession. So Alyssa, I appreciate you being a part of that show and everything you bring to it as well. And we have a lot of fun on this show, and we have a lot of fun on that show. So it's just it's been quite the ride so far.
Absolutely. And you know, I know I can speak for you as well. Like, it's a show that means so much to us, that we've put a lot of work into. And you know, it's an honor to be able to spotlight these women, you know, these women's and their amazing journeys that they've gone through, obviously the struggles that they have to face, but also celebrating the accomplishments that they've had in this business and that they continue to do despite having to face, you know, struggles that men in the industry don't, and they keep persevering in spite of all of that. And it's just an honor to be able to talk to them. And we, you know, we've only done two shows, but you know, it feels like we've been doing this for a while, and it's like we're getting in a good rhythm. And I'm so excited to see, you know, as we keep bringing more guests on and learning so much more about their journeys. And you know, we have a wide range of guests too, you know, like you said, you know, it's not just going to be some of the bigger names that people are familiar with. It's going to be, you know, some, you know, smaller names, but you know, their journeys are just as important, their stories are just as important. And we want to continue to shine a spotlight on this, because you know, it's something that means a lot to both of us.
Absolutely. And it's incredible what some women have to go through just to continue doing a job that they love. And that's not a prerequisite for a lot of men in the industry. So it's important to keep having these conversations. So we hope you all give it a listen and share it with your friends. And don't forget, after every Bears game, Aldo, myself, and Tyler Ellis will give you our immediate thoughts about the Bears' performance, good or bad, on the new post-game show, Bear Football, right here on the Barroom Network. As you can probably imagine, there is the volume's pretty high on that, and the emotions run pretty hot on that. And sometimes it's negative, sometimes it's positive. Sometimes you don't know what you're listening to, but we're screaming at you, so you better listen to it. So it's a real fun time directly after the Bears game. We're going to be directly on after the Bears' Monday night game against the Rams. So go ahead and give that a listen as well.
And I'm hoping it's more positive. I mean, 5-1, yes. Hopefully they take care of business against the Rams, 6-1. I'm sure it'll be another emotion packed ride, because the Bears never make it easy. So hopefully we're listening to you guys after a win on Monday night.
As long as that negative Nancy Aldo doesn't chime in and start spouting about all the things the Bears did wrong after their victory.
You know I will.
I know it's coming anyway, so be ready. It's gonna
happen.
Hey,
as long as the Bears are winning, I don't think anyone will complain about that.
That's true. Yeah.
And let me add that the best way to stay informed with everything that's happening here at the Barroom is to visit the newly opened website, barroomnetwork.com. Bookmark that. It's easy to find for you guys. And also bookmark bearswire.com. I'm the managing editor over there, and we're getting you ready for Monday's game against the Rams and everything beyond.
Excellent. That all sounds great. But that will do it for this edition of Buffon 55. We appreciate you tuning in. For Aldo Gandia and Alyssa Barbieri, I'm John Buffon. We'll see you next time, everybody.